Alright, this is my first one-on-one interview with Edith Nagia for ANS 401. I am Benjamin Young, and today is November 1st, 2005. We're at Walsh Hall using the Side A. We will be talking, our main focus will be the language. And this will be the first tape if we were to make another one on the language. So with that said, I'd like to start out by showing Edith some of my language learning techniques since she gave me some pamphlets of Inupiaq, certain ways, but yeah, as I showed you earlier, that's the praise book that was made by Irma Lawrence.
Irma Lawrence, one of the elders.
Mm-hmm.
1975. Wow. So they use this in church.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
She's a good singer. She's the one that, well, her with the help of such as Lena Pradovich, they helped
translate it.
Like, you know how it's hard to translate some things into English from your language. Like, I kind of like at the beginning, see, like, Sa nung it lak das. Sa means up.
Mm-hmm.
Means up. Nung is the. And Itlak Das is chief, so the higher chief of higher chief.
Oh, wow, isn't that beautiful?
So I just
kind of. So like, cool. So you consider, coolest, higher chief. I like that. In your language, so that it means higher chief?
Yeah, the higher power or the Lord.
Wow. So in your language is higher chief.
Mm-hmm.
Alright.
But this other one is a Haida storytelling book. This was made by Robert Kogo. And this is just a way to show
who's
the kids.
Who's Robert?
Robert Kogo is a Haida elder. He has since passed on, but
uh-huh.
he worked with the Haida Society for revitalization and preservation of the Haida language and oral history. So this is a book that he had made, or a kind of sort of a booklet that he made on different stories.
Wonderful.
That's also pretty old.
Fantastic. So you have a lot of printed material,
mm-hmm,
in your language.
Yeah, most of them are pretty. Well, this is probably the newer one. This is kind of what you, just like what you gave me. It's just ways of learning the language.
Uh huh.
And.
So there's somebody who's teaching it.
Yes, we have a linguist.
A linguist
that helps us out
over there in your hometown. That's wonderful. So the subject is Inupiaq.
Subject is Inupiaq.
Yeah.
So I wanted to know. I'd want to know if you could share with me how were you taught the language and how was
you? We lived it.
You lived it.
I was born in Inupiaq. There was no other language.
So you had two fluent parents?
Mm-hmm, yes. Benson Nagayak Senior and Rhoda Nagayak. Yeah. The first time I ever learned how to talk in English was in school. You know those books, See Jane Run?
Mm-hmm.
That was the first time I ever experienced how to talk in English. Jane, Dick, and Sally. See Puff Run. See Spot Run. Yeah. I found when I was in Wisconsin, it was such an honor. I mean, I'm to this day I'm looking for a Dick, Jane, and Sally book that we used to use when we were growing up, learning the English. And so, Quebec is our mother language. And I remember going to school for the first time, and our teacher, thank God, was Quebec, Dr. Harold Kavuluk. He was Quebec.
How do you spell Kavir, his last name?
K-A-V-E-O-L-O-O-K. Dr. Kabilu. When we couldn't understand what he was trying to teach us, he would talk in Eskimo. And we would get it. And we would say, oh, I joked. He was one of my role models, one of my mentors, when he was alive, the late Dr. Kavuluk.
This is when you didn't live in Barrow, you lived in Ketuba?
Mm-hmm. When our dad moved the whole family, when I was 8 years old, to Barrow, that's where we were raised.
So when you meet with your relatives, or in the household, let's say when you were growing up, was the main language by choice Inupiaq?
Mm-hmm.
So when was the English used, or was it almost
only in school?
Only in school.
Mm-hmm. Only in grade school. We totally talk in Inupiaq, playing outside, being at home. The only time we were trying to learn how to speak it and understand it was in school.
So even to this day, you still use, or when you get together with your brother and sister, no English really, just to move back?
I want it to be like that, but we have nephews and nieces and sons and daughters that don't understand it anymore. That's unfortunate. When we went to high school, that's when we completely turned our mother language. It turned into English and we adapted to that English language in high school, and we come home and started talking in English, and unfortunately that's when we lost Unfortunately, we never talked to our children in our language when they were growing up. That's our mistake. These young mothers who are like 32 years old, 30 years old, they don't... And there's hope. We have written material, the books that I gave you. If somebody can learn Spanish or Japanese, a foreign language, if somebody has the ability to learn 8 languages, why can't we? Why can't our children learn? They can learn. It's just a matter of total inability, I think, until they get it. I don't want to force it on anybody. That's a bad way of teaching. When you force somebody to do it, they don't learn at all. You have to do it in a respectful way. And tell them it's very crucial that you learn, the language. So that's when we lost our language.
Mm-hmm.
And we came home and we were total English. We ended up being English speaking people. Whereas in grade school we were total Indian. We could only speak English in the classroom. They were teaching us English, and then when we went out to the boarding schools, that's when we became total English. And it never dawned on me when I was raising my children. It never, never, never dawned on me to keep the language. We were busy working, raising children, and it just became a habit of talking in English after graduating from high school. But there's hope. Right now they have immersion classes at home. Immersion classes, so it's total Inupiaq. Little kids like 3 years old could go to school and, get that ability to be around Inupiaq language. They're teaching them Inupiaq language at home. And I think it would be even more powerful to go one step further, is to just totally, when they go home, just talk to them in our mother language, in Inupiaq.
So you think that is the most effective way of learning?
Yes.
Is to have it at home?
Yes. Those like me that can speak, write, read, write, have to continue to talk to them in Inupiaq and explain in English what it is, what they're trying to say, what they are saying.
So what other ways are being done so the youth will carry on the Inupiaq language?
The written.
Written.
It's crucial that you have this written material, that they have the ability to find it in the library, and encourage them to read, 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 read. Even if they don't understand, learn how to read it, and then use the Inupiaq dictionary and immerse yourself into the language. And encourage your parents or your grandparents or whoever talks in your language to please talk in your language. I think that's what's going on. They're starting to talk to them in their language, the little kids.
Have emerged.
It's time.
So they have certain buildings they hold kids for a certain amount of time and just nothing but new fact. That's what the immersion.
During the school time, yeah, during the day, school days, yes.
Is it taught in schools?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So they have a new fact.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Language and arts.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How many speakers would you say is there in your region, maybe in Barrow, and maybe Barrow itself?
How many?
Yeah, how many?
I can't tell you. There hadn't been that research at all.
Mm.
But our age group, like 58 years old, on up, 50 on up, I think that we can understand, talk, read, whatever. So, I take that back. There's some 40-year-old. Anyway, my youngest child is like 33 years old, and she can't understand.
She can't understand it?
She can't.
Oh, she can't.
So from there, you know, anybody. But they can learn. It's so sad, and to this day, that's one of my biggest regrets, that I have never talked to my kids in our language. That is one of my biggest regrets in my life.
Do you do anything now to help preserve it? As in, you came to the class, you came to and participated with us here at UAF.
Write it. Put it in books. This is excellent what you have in your language, and we ourselves in the Inupiaqa culture have it in writing. Don't let it get lost. Preserve it. And one of the things that I would highly recommend to anybody in this field of language is to also go back and get their original language and bring it back up. You know, like in the 1800s, 1700s, bring it back, because some of that old Inupiaq language is being lost. I see, I read and said, what is sad? Isn't that sad? I don't want, my goal is to let everybody know, whoever is listening to, go back. I know there's tapes and translations in transcribing videotape. There's videotapes and cassette tapes, I know, in our area that need to be put on books. The old language. And if you can't understand it, ask. Ask an elder, what is this? What do they mean? And I still do that. And I don't care if they said, I have to learn that. That's the way to do it. We know who to ask. Somebody willing to teach us, not somebody who's not going to help.
Earlier you mentioned you guys sing, or is the some of the hymns that's been the gospel hymns?
Mm-hmm.
You guys sing it in church?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we do.
Is the whole church? Because I find that really interesting. Because I'm just that. Just because I've always been exposed to the English, just English churches and English nothing. Only English being in churches. So.
We have a morning service is in English, but they translate the verses in Iberico for the elders. And so there's evening service is totally in Iberico. We sing in Iberico songs. It's in Iberico, the, you know. And then we have the Sinspiration every Sunday at 9:30 to 11:30, which is also in Inupiaq. And we sing English also, English and Inupiaq. Anybody could talk in Inupiaq or English if they want to.
Is there any other events that you guys that happens that you speak nothing but Inupiaq? Such town events or things like church, like, let's see what could be like.
Family gathering should be all in mother language, not just Inupiaq. Your family should all just talk in their language, and then pretty soon you'll be immersed in it and understand it, and that's I would like to push it to where it should be in India. Like for instance, our Aunt Elizabeth France just turned 76, and I'm just enjoying the elders talking in our mother language, just sitting there and listening to them.
I wanted to ask, who taught you to read, to read and write your Inupiaq language? Was that taught early in school in Kaktuvik, or?
Where did I see the first written? It's amazing that we could pick up. We were always in church and singing, and you hear the language and you see it in the hymn books. And we said, that's how we did it. You learn how to say it and you sing it. And pretty soon in the 1970s, that's when the original Bible, it's very thick, it's both in English, and they translated the New Testament, and it's very thick. I remember Mom giving our dad's Bible to me, and I said, wow. And she just gave it to me and said, I'm the one who, because I was involved in church, going to Women's Association and really involved in the church. I remember keeping it for a while. And then our mom passed away, and so out of respect, I gave it to the oldest. I remember giving it to James, the oldest in our family, from Rhode Island. So, because he was a preacher, we have two reverends, Reverend James Narayak, who recently retired from, well, they don't retire, they have the opportunity to preach wherever they want to, I guess, if they retired. And Reverend Marianne Warren, who is actively in her profession of a pastor at our church right now.
The two pastors are James Nagia and
Reverend Marianne Warren.
Do they do their sermons in Lupa? When they pull the barrel?
Yeah. They do. And they do weddings in Lupa in English. Yeah. It's my responsibility as a grandmother to talk to my grandchildren in Inupiaq, and that's my goal, is to do that too.
Talk more with your younger grandchildren.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what that's what they say about our language too, because it's really, because they need the younger kids need to learn those sounds in their mouth. They need to start doing it at a younger age rather than adult, maybe, let's say, you know, whatever, for 29 or 40.
Mm-hmm.
Or else it's much harder for them to pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's maybe true with any language.
Yeah.
It could be true. Or with any native language, I'd say, yeah. Have you started to talk with your grandkids on your back?
No.
Not yet?
I remember talking to my nephews and nieces and saying it in Inupiaq and then in English. That I'm starting to do.
Mm.
A little by little. Mm. So it has to start with me if I want to preserve my Inupiaq language. It has to start with me. I can't blame the system, the boarding school, you know. I have some responsibility as a grandmother to teach them. If I don't want the language to be lost, it's my responsibility to teach them. Really good jam, thank you so much.
Yeah, you're welcome. Is there any more that you wanted to add about the language?
About the language?
Yeah, about its current state or some changes that you've seen that since you've been growing up, or since you grew up, or...
They're in the process of translating the Old Testament into our language right now. They've translated Reverend Rua Amawak had the opportunity to translate the here in Fairbanks. He was living here too sometimes when he was translating the New Testament with Webster. So they're in the process of translating the Old Testament. So there's booklets already out there which were already translated, and I've read a couple of them already, and I said, wow. And somebody's, I don't know whether it's done yet, Psalms. There's designated people, okay, you're going to do Psalms, or they volunteer, I'm going to do Job, I'm going to do this, you know, Leviticus, somebody's going to do Numbers. So they're in the process. That's wonderful. I am so grateful that they're doing that.
All volunteer, all from volunteer, right?
Mm-hmm. There's Martha Aiken, Molly Peterson, Edna McLean was involved in it, Mark Asua Jr., Ida Uliman. So there's people who are in the process of doing that, and it takes a lot of work, a lot of your time, but I'm glad they're doing it. I remember my brother starting on Psalms, James.
Did he complete it? Was he able to complete it?
I remember him working on it. And I haven't asked him if he's completed the whole Psalms. But they're meeting regularly. I think once a week now that summer is gone, they started up, I think they're starting up the meetings again and getting together and helping each other, talking about it.
Well, one quick question. Is there much interest in the high school? I know Bear has a big high school. Is there much interest in the language from that age group?
From the teenage age group? Right now?
Yeah.
Today?
Is there much speakers like in that age?
Some. Before. Like in the 1990s. I think that's when some can speak it and write it. And I'm pretty sure they've been teaching that for quite some time. The writing and reading. The writing. The spelling of words. They really know how to do it. It's really, I'm really glad that these young people know how to write it fluently right on the Blackboard. So yeah, there's some good things coming out of being in the high school or in the grade school. How to write it, read it, the teaching of our language.
Since we're running short of time, that'll we'll wrap it up.
Okay.
So, that's tape number one. Alright, today is November 8th, 2005. I'm Benjamin Young, in here to interview Edith Nagyok for ANS 401, Cultural Knowledge of Native Elders. We are in Walsh Hall, and we're continuing on side A of the tape. And today's topic that we'll be covering is folklore and beliefs.
November, did you say the date?
Yeah, November.
Okay.
And I'd like to start off by asking Edith, what certain beliefs or oral traditions or any stories that involved legend or folklore that you've heard from your grandmother or from family members?
Only folklore. And to tell you the truth, personally, I have not seen them. The stories are about little people. We call them Iminara. And the stories that I have heard about them is that they used to even play with the kids a long time ago. And they wouldn't know whether they were playing with the kids or, I mean, you know, they were small. It's not a folklore. I told you the story about the ten-legged polar bear.
Oh yeah.
It really happened.
Really happened. True story.
It's a true story. The ten-legged polar bear, and there's folklore stories. Like right now, I'm reading up on my dad's story, which is Tata Louis, grandfather and child. And it's like, oh my gosh, it is a folklore. It's about this family who had four sons, but they ended up having only two. And these boys were lost out in the sea, and I'm to the part where they ended up being with this old man and his granddaughter, and now I'm on the part where what they're feeding them is not really animal food. They could see that. The human bones.
Oh.
He was, oh my God, you know, reading it in Inupiaq. It's all in Inupiaq. And so I quit for a while. So I'm still reading it. That's a folklore. That's a story like that has to be fiction. So we do have fiction stories, folklores. Those that are just way out there, mm-hmm. you know. So we call them folklore. Unikat, we call them Unikat, and like the flying whale. That is a folklore. It's not real.
I never heard of that.
It's in one of the books. I'm not too with past people. Tell stories about it. So it's just to increase your imagination, or to just like, when you read, it's really good for you so that you could appreciate reading. And so the folklore about the big giant and two little people are alive inside the big giant's stomach, and they end up sharpening their knives and cutting the giant's stomach, and they go out free, scot-free. That's a folklore. That I grew up with that. My mom told a story about that. And were you there when I was telling about it?
Yeah, that one. She told you in Inupiaq?
Yeah. She always told us, and it's ingrained in our mind, in our hearts, in our souls, so we could never forget it, so we pass it on to our grandchildren, to our nephews, to our nieces, so that they'll remember it. So they'll tell their grandchildren, this is what your great-grandmother told us. That's what folklore is. But there are some things that are true. They say never make fun of people that are handicapped. Well, I know of one person, when he was small, he was making fun of this person who couldn't hear, and he used to tease him or just make fun of him. He said, huh? Huh? Go like this, you know. What? What? Like pretending that he couldn't hear. Like, huh? Huh? What? What? And pretty soon, when he was about elderly, before being too elder, before he got too old, he lost his hearing. And he couldn't hear. And so, and one time this pregnant lady, she was pregnant, really big, about ready to have a child, and she commented or made fun of my uncle because he was bow-legged. And the mother said, oh no, no, no. It was already said and done. She had already made fun of our uncle because he's bow-legged. And her mother said, oh. She wished she hadn't said that. Because she knew you're not supposed to do that when you're pregnant. You know, you're not supposed to be like making fun of people. Otherwise, anyway, she had the baby. And guess what? The baby.
Baby was bow-legged.
Yeah, baby was bow-legged.
Who? Did she realize it after she said that, or her mother said?
Mother said. She automatically said, oh no, no. But it was already too late. She already had said it. So that's a true story where you're not supposed to make fun of other people. It's going to happen to you. That's not a folklore. That's a true story. So that's we think twice before we never do that. I have never seen. But nowadays it's different. These young people, they have to know that. They cannot be making fun of other people just because they're different or whether they're handicapped or not. That's another thing we need to make sure that we tell our younger people, you know. So, like our values, you have to respect others. Respect elders, others, the nature.
Is there any other true happenings that you could remember? Or things that your mom or your parents or grandparents might have told you that teaches you a lesson in a way?
In a way?
Yeah. Or taught you a certain traditional value or value-based stories that teach?
We were all in Yubiak, just in Yubiak kids going to school. So one day in comes this fair-skinned child. It was a white child. And we started picking on the poor child and making him cry and our parents found out about it and our dad put us aside and he scolded. I remember distinctly I knew I was being scolded at, you know, talking to. And he started talking about that. We have two eyes, a nose, and a mouth. Everybody's the same. You do not treat anybody like that just because they're different. So ever since that time, I've always, to this day, I don't see color. But being human, I guess it has to do with media, TV. I don't know. For some reason, I don't like Mexicans. I mean, to me personally, that was my, in my conscience. I'm telling you this because something happened. Anyway, in my life, in my head, in my thinking, without telling anybody, I was just subconsciously prejudiced. Not really prejudiced, I just didn't like their lifestyle, I think. Yeah, the Mexicans. Guess what happened? I have a Mexican grandchild. Oh, talk about I love him to pieces. So there's always a lesson in life. I love him. No, I don't see the Mexican in him. So, like they say, God has a really good sense of humor. Oh, that was so funny. And it also happened to my brother. He's always like, all those Filipinos, you know, always like that. When they first started coming around, guess what happened? He got a Filipino grandchild. Love him to pieces. Yeah. We learned our lessons one way or the other when we forget that we're not supposed to be prejudiced. God chose us.
I like those stories.
Huh?
I like how that turned out.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? It's a cycle. Like, we have to teach our children what's right and what's wrong and how to treat other people. And that's we have to share, we have to. Like, our mom, I grew up, she was always saying, don't do that, it's wrong. Watch it, watch out, you're going to hurt yourself. You know, any child. And I see myself doing that, and it's okay, that's all right. And I would hear somebody cussing, some young, don't say it, you don't do that in front of children or anywhere. I don't like it, don't cuss. That's my responsibility. Because I think nowadays they say, oh, parents might scold me or I should stay away from it. No way, I'm not like that. I'm going to be assertive, and if I hear any cussing or any fighting or whatever, it's my responsibility to say, it's wrong, don't say that, don't do that, you don't hurt each other, you know. So I think we need to teach our young people. They need to hear that. I think they appreciate that in the back of their minds, that somebody cares enough to tell them, you know, quit talking like that. It's no good to hear you say things like that. It's awful. Or my nephew one time was talking back to my sister-in-law, and boom! Instantly I said, you do not talk back to your mom whatsoever, ever again. I don't like that, I don't want to hear you ever anymore, you know. That's what we need to do. That's what we need to do as elders, or we're becoming elders. Or you can do that to your nephews or nieces. You, I'm passing it down to you, but you know, what we need to do. We just cannot stand there or sit around there and say, it's none of my business. It is our business. If we want our world to get healthier, that's our business. Yeah.